I am a seer, and when we work with the dead, I open myself up entirely. So does that open me up to possession? Well, maybe. But what is that possession? For me, it's somebody's grandma that just needs my mouth to say the words because their granddaughter is sitting in the room. So I'm not afraid to be possessed either. All I am is a conduit for transferring information and words of love from one realm to the other.
Welcome to Loving the F. I'm Melissa Allison, and this is the podcast that looks at the forbidden and says, hey, baby. I talk to a new guest each week and examine the female, finances, friends, family, fitness, and all the other F words. So join me, especially if it's forbidden.
Thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode of Loving the F. I'm Melissa Allison, your host, and I am so excited to have this week's guest. You want to talk about forbidden, we're going to talk about witchcraft with the one and only Tamara, owner of Crone's Hollow. It's a metaphysical store in Salt Lake City. And thank you, Tamara, for being here and having this conversation.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. So I, like most people, grew up believing witchcraft was not a good thing, that it was evil, and that only bad things came from it. And when I started working at Crone's Hollow, I quickly discovered that that was not the case and that they're very ethical, responsible, good, kind, loving, generous people who want good in the world. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that, about some of the misconceptions surrounding witchcraft and what it is and what it isn't.
You are correct. There are quite a few misconceptions around the practice of witchcraft. Witchcraft is the practice of being a witch. It is the craft of being a witch. And what that means is that you find specific tools that work for you to help you move into realms of your life where you want to go. You're walking along a path and you say, okay, the universe has offered me this, but I don't really want that. So instead, I'm going to use universal vibrations. I'm going to use spellcrafting to be able to get to the place that I want to be, instead of just accepting what, you know, the universe or God or, you know, whoever your deity is, has to offer to you. And so in doing this, you change things. You change your path. You change your course. And so really, that's what witchcraft is. It is being able to take a step down a path of your choosing instead of being directed by someone or something else.
You know,
does that clarify it?
Absolutely. And, you know, last year I did the medicine wheel, and I feel like a lot of the things that I'm learning about in witchcraft, it's working with the elements. It's connecting with the elements, I should say, with the earth. And you mentioned the energetics and stuff and the cosmos. And I find it that it's more, for me anyway, is that it's more empowering. It's affirming, and that it's more ritual. And I don't see any difference from the type of ritual in that, other than the tools that you use, than in religion that is practiced. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. Because when you do a spell, it is energy directed. It is a way of taking your vibration, your energies, and putting it out there and moving things in the direction you want them to go. How is it any different than prayer?
Well, and I loved what you said last week when I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to have you as a guest. I can't believe I didn't think of it before. But I loved what you said when I told you how when I got here, I just one wall after another and all the technological problems that I was having and then getting in a car accident and finally just snapping. And you said that I was shedding through chaos.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that and what that means?
Well, shedding through chaos is, you know, one way to look at it is when we get in situations where we need to make changes, we often self-sabotage and we set up a dynamic where everything, you know, essentially goes in the toilet, because only then can you push off and rise to the top.
Right.
You know, it's like when you jump into the swimming pool, sometimes you have to go all the way to the bottom to be able to push off and rise back up to the surface. So often, whether we subconsciously or consciously create chaos, so we can then use that chaos or that vibrational abzu to be able to feed ourselves into our next iteration.
So when I asked you about business, because with COVID-19, you know, the store had to close for a little bit and it's opened back up, and you said it's doing better than ever. You talked about how people are reaching, like in times like this, people are looking for any form of, and what do they find when they come to your store?
What they find is hope. What they find that in a world where chaos abounds, and you know, we have self-created chaos, but then we have chaos that the world creates for us. And COVID is one of those things. There's nothing that we can do about it. We simply have to be able to swim through it. And as we swim through that, we need, you know, things to push us in the directions we want to go. And magic is exactly that thing. And so I think people reach out because they want to be able to find the appropriate tools to be able to move through the chaos.
I feel like I joined one thing for a moon ceremony, and I think it was releasing or something. And it felt like affirmation. It felt like prayer. It felt like a community of people coming together and with not necessarily the same prayer, but the same intention of, you know, releasing and moving forward. And I remember, I don't know if I shared this with you, but that night I got an email not long after from this girl who was helping me with waking Aphrodite and pulling out. And I was like, oh, thank you. You know, there was a kind of relief. And then there was chaos after that related to her, but it was just so powerful to me to be able to do that and to have the reminders of the burning candle, of the rituals that we did. So what are some of the things people can do in their life right now? Because you mentioned that they're looking for hope.
Absolutely. You know, one of the missions of Crone's Hollow is to create a safe space for those to practice craft, whatever that means in your life. You know, there are many different ways to walk a magical path. And there are many different ways to do ritual. Sometimes ritual is simply a prayer. And it's where you are, you know, reaching out to something else to assist you. Sometimes it is looking within yourself for that power. And in my path, I believe that we set things into motion. And we do that by changing the vibration of either ourselves or the things around us so that it steers us in a specific direction. So when you're working with magic, one of the most powerful things you can do is to say the words out loud. You know, you can't think abracadabra. You must say abracadabra. Because in doing so, you use your voice and the vibrations of your sound waves to actually put it out into the ether. If you have a problem saying things out loud, sometimes writing them down will help. And that's another form of a very powerful spell. Let's say that you wanted to do a money spell. And you, money is what you needed to go in whatever direction you wanted to go. So sit down. Light a candle, get yourself focused, and write yourself a check for X number of dollars from your own checking account. And then you take that check and you put it on your altar or in a place where you can see it every day, and you will be constantly reminded which direction you're going in. That right there changes the vibration and opens the doors for that money to come to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. In fact, it's funny you should mention money. Because I know I'm in need of it. I just went grocery shopping before coming home and starting this conversation. And they asked for a donation for whatever nonprofit they were raising money for. And I initially said no, because I'm thinking, I don't have any money. I don't blah, 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 blah. And it's like, give a dollar. You can give a dollar. And it just felt like the act of giving that dollar to help somebody else, it kind of helped shift something within myself. And I just feel like that's mm-hmm. an affirmation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There is this thing called the theory of Amra, and this has to do with open hands. So if you have $5 to your own name, that's all you have, and you're holding that $5 in your both of your hands, you don't have any hands free to take new money coming in. But if you give away that $5 or a part of that $5, then you've cleared room for new wealth or new prosperity to come to you.
I remember one of the reasons I thought I really like this place and I want to stick around for a while was when we had one of our first meetings, and I shared my concern about having clients come to me and tell me that another reader had said they had evil energies or something attached to them, and that for X amount of dollars, they could get rid of it for them. And I shared my concern about that because I personally don't subscribe to that thought. And I tell my clients, you know, you're in control of your own life. You have the ability to do those things yourself, and that things only have the power over us that we give it. And you said that that is not something that you guys do at Crone's Hollow. And can you talk about that practice and having power over your own life?
Well, you know, power over is a very interesting concept, and one that comes up quite often in witchcraft. Because you have the ability to change things and to change the vibration of things and to change the course of your actions and other people's actions, there is a potential for power over. And power over is when you are manipulating someone else to your will. And it's unethical because what it does is it takes away their free agency. If you power over, my belief is that you will end up being responsible for that. And it's going to come back to you in, you know, a way that you're probably not going to like. So I try to avoid that type of magic at all costs. Now, is there ever a time when I would do power over magic? Possibly. You know, there may be a situation that would come up that would warrant that kind of a thing. Let's say if one of my grandchildren was in danger or something like that, then I may go there. But generally, I don't.
Right.
We had a reader here at Crone's Hollow that had the practice of telling people that they had demons attached to them. And, you know, quite frankly, we called BS on that. And that person is no longer here.
Right.
And they're no longer here of their own volition. We didn't move them along. They moved themselves along because we set up wards in our store that says this kind of behavior is not welcome. And if you engage in this kind of behavior, then you will voluntarily move yourself on down the road.
Wow. So how can people use that in their own life? Like if you're in a work situation or a relationship, or especially if it's by blood, you know, relation, how can you use that to help get a control, you know, some sense of control in your life and move it in the direction you want? Because I know people who feel stuck.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is one of the things that I learned a great deal about attending your Waking Aphrodite series. Mm-hmm. Is that you must set appropriate boundaries. And once you've set appropriate boundaries, that will work for yourself. It will work for the people close to you. It will work for the people not so close to you. And it works for, you know, spiritual entities in the world at large. So know what they are and then speak them out loud. And once you do that, then those things don't come into your life. And if they do, you can pretty easily boot them back out.
What recommendations do you have for somebody who's interested in witchcraft, who maybe they're not in Salt Lake City and don't have access to you? How do they find a coven or a metaphysical store or wherever they are to start? What do you recommend they do? How do they flesh out people who act ethically, responsibly, and aren't going to lead them down the wrong path?
Great questions. What I would do first is I would go to the internet And I would put in, you know, Wicca and whatever city you were in, and then see what comes up. You know, explore the local groups, whether it's on meetup.com, whether, you know, there are local Wiccan churches, whether there are local metaphysical stores. And wherever there's a metaphysical store, you're going to be able to plug into a community. Once you plug into a community, then start going to things. If there are open circles, go there. If there are online chats, do that. And don't get in a rush to join a coven. That one will take time, because covens worth being in don't solicit new members. They just wait and watch, and the right people show up.
You know, I found that to be the case working in your store two, three days a week. And no one ever solicited. In fact, it was a friend who wasn't even a witch who said, "Hey, I'm going to this thing. Want to come with me?" And I was like, "Sure," even though I'd been working there. Which brings me to the question of how would you define a cult, and how does that play into witchcraft? And is it different than how it plays into religion?
It is not different in how it plays into witchcraft or religion. You know, cults have to do with groups, and groups can be in organized religions, they can be in Christianity, they can be in witchcraft, they can be in, you know, the local Boy Scouts. It's just whatever group you happen to be circulating in. And a cult is just something that tries to control you. Witchcraft doesn't do that. They want to empower you, not disempower you.
Right. It's very empowering. I was going to ask you, what are some of the fears? I can name some of the fears that I had growing up about being, with a Ouija board. I still have issues with that and still haven't done it. But I know that you guys sell them over there, and calling on spirits, or I could become possessed, or fears of going to hell if I play with witchcraft, those types of things. What do you say to those? And then what are some of the ones that you've come up with? And after that, I'd like to talk about how it's empowered you and what it has done in your life.
Okay, well, that was a big bite.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right, let's start with the Ouija boards.
Okay.
Okay, you know, not only do we sell Ouija boards, we also do a Ouija board class and a seance every time Friday the 13th rolls around.
Oh,
and we do it just because it trips people's triggers. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that are afraid of them are the very people that come to the class, because they want to know more. They want to know why they're afraid. And they're afraid for a couple of reasons. And one of them is that, you know, certain Christian sects have made witchcraft a terrible thing when it isn't. You know, all witchcraft is empowering yourself and using all tools available to you to become a better person in the way that you want to become, not in the way that your church wants you to become. Dealing with spirits, you know, this comes from our fear of death. You know, our culture is so broken when it comes to death that we can't even say it. You know, when someone close to you dies, we don't say so-and-so is dead. We say they passed away. We can't even say the word. Not only can we not say the word, we can't view the body. We are afraid to touch the body. You know, that final gift of washing and caring for someone we love is taken away from us because we have to be afraid of the dead. When really the person that we loved has simply taken a different form. And so when we reach out to spirits, we're not looking for, you know, ghosts to come wiggle around in a Halloween atmosphere. What we want to do is reach out and restore a relationship from someone we love, from our ancestors, from our family that has passed on. And so until we get to a point where we view those who have died as, you know, just a continuation of our lineage, of our ancestors, then there's going to be a broken part of us. So I have an entirely different view of death and working with spirits. I am a seer, and when we work with the dead, I open myself up entirely. So does that open me up to possession? Well, maybe. But what is that possession? For me, it's somebody's grandma that just needs my mouth to say the words because their granddaughter is sitting in the room. So I'm not afraid to be possessed either.
Right.
All I am is a conduit for transferring information and words of love from one realm to the other.
Right.
Okay, so we got through two parts of your question. What was the other one?
possession. Going to hell.
Oh.
That if you do witchcraft.
What is hell?
What is hell? Well, I guess it's your whatever definition.
We each have to define our own hell. And I've heard the theory that the things that make us uncomfortable here are the hell we experience.
Hmm.
Whether we experience it here or whenever we move to another realm. You know, I don't think that there is a fire and brimstone, you know, stinky and sulfur kind of a place.
Well, and I have said on my show on several occasions, I don't know, I don't pretend to know anything about the afterlife. If there is an afterlife, I cannot say I know this for sure. But my sense, and maybe it's just my, because I don't, but my sense of it is, it's like when I was going through my divorce, I left several times and my husband would always bring me back saying, this is not God's plan. And I finally said to him, if this is God's plan, where's Lucifer? Because I am ready to talk. Because it was like my living hell at that moment was my marriage, was the life that I was living, was the person I was married to. And so, yeah, I think our own definition, and sometimes we're already living it. So what tools are there to step out of that? Like, I remember I have asked you and Durakin, who works for you, and some of the other people there at Crone's Hollow, like about the phases of the moon and what type of work can I do with this phase of the moon, and had so much fun with that, just connecting with that, you know, because as women, well, and we're already so much water. What is it? 98% water we're made up of, the tides and the earth and stuff. So that was fun for me. But what can we do to shift ourselves? Like, what's a beginning ritual? You mentioned writing, saying things out loud, stuff like that. Oh, but also I want to talk about what it has brought to you in your life.
So beginning rituals. The best beginning ritual you can do is to get yourself a notebook and create your own book of shadows. As you learn things, whatever they are, or as you realize things, or as you go through the Gnostic process of saying, oh, aha, I get that. And you make these connections and you look at things out of the box, write them down. And then continue to write them down, because what you see this week will flavor what you see next week. And then when you look back 2 months from now, you're going to say, oh, and then you'll have another aha moment. And the Gnostic process just keeps rolling.
Right.
So you'll never remember it all if you don't write it down. So journaling is important. If you are a dreamer, keep yourself a dream journal and you'll see how your subconscious works. So that's probably the most simple and easiest work that you can do for yourself. Probably a good place to start. It's also a good place to start is to get yourself a good beginner's book. There are many beginner books on witchcraft out there. You can get them on Amazon. You know, if you happen to be in Salt Lake, you can come into the store. We have all kinds of them here. Encyclopedia of Witchcraft. Just Google that. All kinds of things will come up. There's one by Buckland. We call it Buckland's Big Blue. It's just a big blue encyclopedia of witchcraft. Great information. So start there. And then when you learn a little bit, then you have questions that come up. And the questions are where the magic starts. Answers close doors. Questions open doors. So keep asking questions. And so how has it changed my life? Well, immensely. I realize that I am responsible for myself. I am only beholden to myself. And people in my life, they come and they go. And it's okay. Because as I swim through, you know, the stream that is my magical path, I will keep encountering people. And sometimes people come back again and again. Sometimes they're not in the same body, you know. You know, those of us who have, you know, been through divorce will realize that, you know, my first husband and my second husband were the same guy. They were just in two different skins because I haven't learned yet.
Yeah, I keep thinking if I don't get married, I won't make that mistake again, so I won't have to relearn it. I don't know how that's working out. But
no, they'll just come around. Those come around and be part of your life without marriage. And
right.
I don't know that that's any better.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not, you know. Another part of this, which I can speak about with you, is being psychic, being intuitive, and some of the misconceptions that goes along with it. And we've talked a little bit about it before. You know, first off, everyone has the ability to we're all intuitive, we're all empaths. It's just to what degree are you open to it? How much are you willing to take in and to accept? Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. And you hit that right on the nose, that everyone has the ability, but to what degree are you open? You know, I mean, if you look at kids, when they have these wonderful imaginations and they tell you that there are monsters in the closet, believe them, there are. And we keep telling them that there aren't monsters in the closet. And in telling them that, we're gaslighting them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell them there aren't monsters in the closet. Just teach them how to put the monsters at bay.
That's good. I have gaslighted all five of my children.
I gaslighted mine too.
Yeah.
But I also make monster spray.
Oh.
A little bit of spring water, a little bit of heliotrope essential oil. Heliotrope is the scent that is in baby powder.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you put a little heliotrope in that water and you shake it up and you spray it and it smells like baby powder. And that comforts them because they are familiar with that smell. And that chases the monsters away. You've then taught them how to use magic and a tool to keep themselves safe.
Right.
Didn't tell them that their fear didn't exist.
Right. Well, you know, and something that brings to mind is that's the very beginning of us teaching our children not to trust their gut, not to trust themselves. And gosh, that's such a disservice.
It's true. You know, once I started trusting my gut was when the magic really kicked in. Because if you're not trusting your gut, how can you hear spirit? You have to look to a religious or ecclesiastical leader in order to say, is what I'm feeling valid? Then you're not trusting your gut and you're not hearing spirit. You're only hearing some guy telling you what you need to do.
Yeah. You know, I had dreams from like the age of 6 or 7 that came true. And my mom found out about this because I always told her about my horrible dreams because they were so vivid, so real. I'd wake up crying and I'd go and I'd tell her because she said, if you talk about them, they won't come back. Because oftentimes I'd go back to sleep and they'd return. So I told her, and when she realized that my dreams were coming true, she started teaching me how to open my mind and all this other stuff because it's kind of where it comes from. And oh my gosh, it just flew out of my mind. It just went out. It'll come back later if it's supposed to. How does somebody, if maybe they're not open to it, how do they start becoming open? Like, what can they do to start being receptive to change that?
Well, one of the things that I learned in college as I was doing early childhood education studies is that in order for us to be truly open to learning, we have to think like a child. And so on my bookshelf, I always keep some children's books. Because as you read children's books, it puts your brain in a different mode. So if you need help breaking out of, you know, the way you've always thought, go read Green Eggs and Ham. because it's going to change the way you think, and it's going to open your mind to some different things. Because working with witchcraft and being open to spiritual things and psychic things is a matter of perspective. If you believe you can do it, then you open the door for it happening.
What you just said about the imagination and becoming open to it, I remember when we were doing the shaman medicine wheel, she said, if you're having a hard time picturing this, make it up. Like, what would it look like? If you did picture it, what would it look like? You know, and I found that to be very helpful.
You know, sometimes there's no recipe for becoming a successful psychic. Just one day you sit down and you focus on a candle flame and you just keep pushing your monkey mind away until you hear something in the back of your mind. And don't dismiss it as something that's not real. Oh, that was just my imagination. Well, yes, it was. And no, it wasn't.
Oh, I remember what I was going to tell you earlier. Okay, so when I was little, I had all these things. And so I started doing readings at like 17, 18 years old. And family and friends, as they started learning that I could do this and that I was accurate, I felt like they'd invite me over, and eventually somewhere in those conversations or getting together, hey, would you connect with so-and-so? Hey, would you just check this out for me? What do you think of this type of thing? So I think I was 30 and I don't do it anymore. I've retired. And I remember, because you were talking about being open to it and receptive, I remember just a few years ago, I was hanging out with a couple of girlfriends and we were drinking wine, and I didn't even preface it. I just started giving this girl a reading because of feeling, you know, all relaxed and loose and everything. It just came. And so I just did it, and I hadn't done it in so long. And they were like, what was that? And we all just kind of laughed. And I jokingly said, you know, I'm going to start a business called The Drunken Psychic, because when you have a glass of wine, that editor that you talked about, it goes away. And you are open to those thoughts, to those ideas and everything else. And not that you have to be inebriated to have that, but it definitely helped me to, made it easier to identify what it feels like to do that, to just let go, to trust that process versus questioning myself and doubting myself. Because I'll say it oftentimes if I'm still not sure, and it's like, okay, you're going to think I'm crazy, or if you don't agree with this, that's fine, but I just have to say it. I'm 99.99999% of the time completely accurate. And so, yeah, just allowing yourself to be receptive to, I think, writing it down, because I think initially we're going to think that we're crazy.
Well, and that's because that's what we've been trained to think.
Right.
Well, growing up, they have always said, if you hear voices, you're nuts. Well, no, if you hear voices, maybe you are in tune with spirit. It's just that you don't have the inhibitions, which is where the wine comes in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What would you offer to someone who maybe wants to get in more? Because you read crystal balls, actually. That is something I just don't seem to have the skill for, but I think I remember you saying you can learn.
Every child has been outside on the lawn, laying on their back, looking up at the clouds, and said, oh, that cloud looks like a dog. That is scrying. It is taking shapes and assigning them an image, and then saying, what does that image mean to me? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I see a dog in a cloud, or if I see the shape of a dog in a crystal ball, what does that mean to me? I mean, what does a dog mean to you?
Right.
You say, what do dogs stand for? Loyalty, companionship, responsibility. And everybody's going to have a different take on what a dog is.
Right.
So there is no one universal thing. And I laugh when I see dream interpretation books that say, okay, you know, when you dream about a wedding, it means a funeral. And when you dream about a funeral, it means a wedding. Well, that's complete crap. It means what you think it means. And everyone will have a different language as they're learning. So can you learn it? Yes. start at the beginning and say, okay, here's what I saw and here's what it means to me. And you write that down.
Go ahead. And what about tarot cards? Because that took me, I finally bought my first deck of tarot cards from you before I moved from Salt Lake City.
Hooray.
I know. And they're beautiful. So what is the deal with tarot cards? Why are people so afraid of them? And how do they empower? Like, what is the misconception around cards?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of that has to come with, you know, with readers that were unethical. You know, if you have an unethical reader who is manipulating you, I mean, it's happened. So there are unethical readers out there.
Right.
And so if you have someone that is manipulating you, it's the same thing as telling somebody that, you know, you have a demon attached to you and for $100, I can make it go away. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a demon, I can't make it go away. You can make it go away. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing with tarot cards is that they just got a bum rap because there are some poor practitioners out there.
Mm-hmm. You guys have classes.
We do classes on Zoom, via Zoom. And they're actually, we are going to be doing a Zoom class on the 8th of August for tarot reading. So, I mean, if it doesn't make any difference what part of the country you're from. If you want to join us for the Zoom class, just send us an email at classes@croneshollow.com and we can help you get signed up.
Are numbers limited?
Well, we probably need to keep it below 50, but.
Well, I just didn't know, like, but yeah, that I might sign up for that because I have this beautiful deck and I've been getting to know it. It's interesting. And I do this with my oracle cards and my angel cards, but more so I feel like it's a stronger process with the tarot cards.
Well, tarot cards are an entirely different thing than oracle cards. Mm-hmm. Oracle cards are almost exclusively read intuitively. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the card and in the moment, it's like scrying, this is what this means to me. But tarot cards, because they have a major and a minor arcana, follow, it's almost a lore cycle, very much like magical paths have. You know, you start with the card that's the Fool, which is the beginning of your journey, and then you go through all of these different phases as you move along your path. And so, you know, it's a lot more structured than an oracle card. And just the fact that it's more structured, which means there's more there is to learn about it, it becomes daunting.
Right.
And that, and it takes a long time to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never been able to read tarot cards.
Oh.
I am not a tarot card reader. I wanted to, but the crystal ball said, nope, you're mine.
Yeah, I use the oracle cards and the angel cards in my readings, and it is very intuitive. And in fact, the way that I made up my readings is, like, I just made it up, and it means what I say it means, and it works out because everybody's happy. They're like, yeah, that's it. But I am also using my intuition, my psychic abilities.
Yeah. You become a conduit, as does any reader or oracle. You become a conduit between the universe or spirit and the querent. I mean, all you're doing is opening up your mind and spirit's telling you what this is supposed to mean. And your mouth just does the words.
It's interesting because I wanted it to be all light and happiness. And I didn't even learn it there. And but in retrospect, after this last year and learning the things I did at Crone's Hollow and through the shaman medicine wheel and all these other things is the important aspect of our shadow side. And that scares a lot of people. I've been doing readings most of my life. And not until recently was I open to this shadow aspect. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, the shadow aspect is just a part of yourself that doesn't step into the light, you know, and everyone has parts of themselves that are unexplored. You know, it's like the dark side of the moon. It's there whether you see it or not. And to try to ignore it and make it all love and light and beautiful, all that is Christian baggage that you're carrying around with you. You know, part of Christianity is that we are born with sin. We are born as sinful beings, and sin being removing yourself from the divine. And so we spend our entire lives trying to step back into the divine, to go down the right-hand path back to God. And the whole story of the Garden of Eden was about man removing himself from God and looking at his humanity instead, because that's the reason we're here, is to experience humanity. And we can't experience humanity if we're not, if we're constantly walking directly toward God. So you have to be able to move back and forth. Now, is there a time that you should be with toward the divine? Yes, there is. Whatever the divine means to you. So go and experience grace, and then step back and experience humanity. And then go back and experience grace again, and then step back and experience humanity. And this is the dextral and the sinistral path. And as you move back and forth, you create this back and forth movement, which is the path of the hedge witch. One foot on one side and one foot on the other. You're experiencing both, which is, in the eyes of many religions, an abomination. But for me, I think I'm fulfilling the reason I'm here.
Well, doesn't one inform the other? That's when you were saying that, that's the feeling, that the thought that I had is that, when you said step into the divine and then step into humanity, go back to divine, it's like, for me, it's like my experience of the divine will be influenced by my experience in humanity, and my experience in humanity will be influenced by what I experienced when I stepped into that divine space.
And with doing both of them, you have a deeper appreciation for both sides. And
right.
You can't really experience the satisfaction of eating an amazing meal unless you're really hungry. Balance.
Yeah.
It's that fulcrum point, as you stand right in the center of the seesaw and you balance both. I mean, this is what witchcraft is about.
Right. Well, I have really enjoyed this conversation. It has taken me to a place in my head that you're right, it is a big bite into something that is huge. And if people have questions or want to learn more, they can call Crone's Hollow, and I'm going to be putting your contact information for Crone's Hollow. But I have one last question, Tamara, that I ask all my guests, and I think I know what your answer is going to be. It is, what did you used to believe was forbidden in your life that now you enjoy?
Oh my, what an amazing question. I think that the answer to that would be different every single day of my life if you ask me.
Really? I love that.
Today's answer is that what was forbidden is to ever tell people no, and to put myself above them, to put my own needs first. And now that I've learned to do that and to say, no, you don't get to walk on me. No, you don't get to abuse me. No, you don't get to use me. I am enjoying myself because I'm valuing myself.
Right. I love that. Yeah, valuing yourself, especially as a woman. We're not taught that in our youth.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's our virginity. That's the only value we have. And that is a whole other conversation.
I've been valueless for a lot of years.
Yeah, you and me both. Well, I love you to death. Thank you so much for this conversation. And we'll have to do this again and talk about what we just brought up. That's another huge topic.
Great. I would love to have another conversation with you. I miss you deeply.
Aww.
And thank you for having me here.
Oh, thank you so much, Tamara.
You've been listening to Loving the F. I'm Melissa Allison, and I hope you'll join me again next week.